The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Good evening, sir. Good evening. Good evening. Good evening. Good evening, one and all. All right, good evening. Now, what a great book you've got there. What an excellent choice of reading material.
Do you mean If Chins Could Kill? Confessions of a B-movie actor.
That's the one I'm referring to.
This right here, yeah?
Mm. Wonderful book.
It's nice. It looks so lovely next to you.
We're gonna have a nice, casual, friendly conversation, but we are also making this part of Jesse's and my weekly podcast, so I'm going to sort of launch it, start it in a, you know, kind of a formal way, but then we're just going to have fun. So that's a little preamble to what we're going to do right now. Hi, I'm Leonard Maltin.
And I'm Jesse Maltin.
And this is Maltin on Movies. And while, as we're taping this, the future of the free world is being debated by two people who will, one of whom we presume will become the leader of the free world.
Well, and do a really good job. I'm looking forward to one of those people doing an amazing job. Sorry to interrupt.
While that's going on, we're here at Fantastic Fest at the Highball.
With
the people's candidate and the king of Karo syrup, Bruce Campbell.
That is true. Thank you. Your point is well taken. Ash is running for president. There is a full-on campaign. I hope he gets about 10,000 write-in votes.
All from Michigan?
That could be. Yeah. So there's still time for Ash to screw up our country.
Oh, others are taking care of that. Don't worry about that, Bruce.
Yeah.
Bruce, welcome.
Thank you.
And thank you for being here. And we just had the treat here at Fantastic Fest of watching two episodes from season two of Ash versus Evil Dead from Stars. And my daughter and I just had a great time.
That was
fantastic. As did the whole audience.
There's a Ray Harryhausen joke. It gives nothing away, but there's a Ray Harryhausen joke, which both we elbowed each other at the same time, which was painful, but great. Something, though, that we spoke about a little earlier before we came to meet you today. I love my dad a lot, and I respect him. But the man loves Shemp, and so do you.
We named a beer after him for this show, Shemp's Beer. Ash drinks exclusively Shemp's beer.
Because
so you got to get over that problem. Curly is way too on the nose. Shemp is the ugliest comedian ever photographed.
That's right. He was known as that. We won't have that debate, though, because we'll choose not to have that
I'm more
debate.
Of a Zeppo girl myself, but that's...
Oh, get out of town. What a bore.
Fine.
Anyway, Bruce, I have to tell you, I think I read your book when it was new. It's a long time ago when
15 years ago now.
So I was rereading and skimming it today. It's called If Chins Could Kill.
There's a lot of pictures, so I can understand that.
But it's really a fascinating saga because here we are. You are still, in 2016, working with your high school buddies, the guys with whom you made Super 8 home movies.
Yeah.
Who were with you? You were with them, and they were with you through the whole journey of making your first film, going through the trial and error of making a film on the cheap in Michigan, having it distributed, having it become a success. I'm talking, of course, about Evil Dead, and then moving to LA. All of you, you deciding to go your path as an actor. They decided to go their path as a production team, a production entity. And you've continued to be friends, you've continued to work together, and now you're all doing it all over again on cable TV.
Yeah.
And I imagine the lunch budget for an episode of this series for Stars exceeds your original budget for Evil Dead.
Yeah, on the original Evil Dead, Rob Tappert, Sam Raimi, and myself contractually we got $35 a week.
Mm-hmm.
And we never took it. And we went to the store one time to buy some gum, and none of us had enough money to buy any gum. We're like, God, this movie sucks. This is ridiculous. So, yeah, it's nice to get paid now for the work we did then.
Yeah, sure. But you're being paid and being paid back, too, it seems to me.
Well, I got to say, I would just throw this out. You know, we're very grateful to the fans because you guys could have been very dickish about this. And not accepting the new cast members, the new universe that we put in.
Sure.
You know, hopefully Sam Raimi gave enough street cred, directed the pilot, wrote it, set it up, set the bar. And so really the trick now is to trying to maintain that. Now that we finished season two, I'm excited for them to see that. I'm as excited as anybody in this room because it's we want them to start to see that there's a show here, that we're serious. We want to do as many episodes as we can.
Well, as I say, it's fun.
It's really... Yeah. We're both
It's terribly gross.
Blood and that
but
sort of...
You noticed that, did you?
Yes.
Yeah.
Did not get past
Oh,
me.
He jumped a solid six times. That's... Yeah, yeah. But like you said, I mean, your cast is wonderful.
Yeah.
They're really great. And each one has a personality. And it's a lot of fun. So I can get past wanting to cry and cover my eyes a little bit. Because it's funny enough and it's intelligent enough that it's worth it.
We just don't like grim horror.
Yeah.
To me, that's it. Humor sells it for me.
Yeah, because I don't know. There's plenty of grim horror out there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we'll do something else. It's a little different. It's a weird genre. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah.
But it's not like you'll go, oh, let's watch that other horror comedy that's on.
Well, and plus now my dad knows what a Prince Albert is. So, you know, win-win, right?
Win-win, yep.
Yes, yes.
We all learned something today.
Yep.
And I have to say, you know, it's going to sound like I'm sucking up or blowing smoke in your face, but you're just dynamite in this show.
You are.
You are terrific.
You really are.
Well, I have to say what's weird is someone the other day, they said, aren't you tired of playing Ash? And I'm like, no, man, we're just getting started.
Yeah.
We really are. Ash has a thing called dialogue now. Right. I mean, I'd go weeks on Evil Dead 2, just screaming all by myself in a cabin. I remember one day we had to say dialogue. I'm like, what the hell is that? And this, you get to flesh it out. You get to interact with other characters.
Yeah.
This season is really nice. You get to go back and meet his actual family,
yeah.
See his actual house, his bedroom.
And, the and one who, thing we who missed plays with your the, father?
Mr. Lee Majors, thanks very much. Thanks for asking. Yeah, so there's a lot of fun revelations. We share a bionic past, Lee and I, of sorts, with my character. But there was this very short list of who to get for Dad. You know, there's no way. You had to get Lee Majors, otherwise you failed.
Well, you succeeded instead, which is nice.
Yeah.
Which is nice.
No, it's a good thing. So we have a lot to be grateful for. And Starz, what most fans don't realize is, if you want the crazy stuff that you saw tonight, you can really only get it on Starz.
Yeah.
If this was on basic cable, this show would be butchered. If it was on broadcast, you'd see a chainsaw coming toward them, and you'd cut to a commercial.
Yeah. And mind you, I'm saying this, and I people who listen to our podcast certainly know, I'm a wuss.
Big wuss.
I have a very hard time watching graphic horror movies these days and graphic gore. But somehow, if you leaven it with comedy and humor, I can take it. And not only can I take
a lump of sugar helps the gore go down.
Well, what you called him, the king of, I want to get the name right.
The king of Karo syrup. I mean, and that too hasn't changed, has it?
No, it hasn't really changed over the years. It's still horrible, horrible stuff.
Every person who started out, apparently, making home movies, 8mm or super 8mm home movies decades ago, including our guest last night, Tim Burton, who started doing the same thing, learns early on that if you want to have fake blood, you go to the grocery store or the supermarket and you buy Karo syrup.
Well, it's because, right there in your aisle. All you have to do is pour out about a third of it so you can add the other ingredients.
Uh-huh.
One of the main ingredients is obviously the red food coloring.
Right.
You take a small thing and pretty much put the whole thing in.
People, if you're taking notes, just make
it. It'll be on
then
Pinterest later.
Then you take a
later.
Coffee creamer. Like Coffee Mate, so it won't go bad because there's not a single original ingredient in the whole thing.
No animals suffered for that.
No. So you mix that up, and you got to get all the lumps out. And what that does is then you pour that in, and it makes it opaque because blood is opaque.
Mm-hmm.
And you take one or two drops of blue. If you use too many drops of blue, it'll go purple, And if you don't use any blue, it can get orange on you, and that's the faux pas.
This
you
is
shake
voice.
It up right in the bottle, about $6, $1.50. That's your day's worth of blood right there.
Wow. This is the voice of experience.
I'm just telling you, though. And this then you're doomed knows. Because you put that on, and flies love it. I used to, Evil Dead 2, I took naps with a fly swatter, because I'd wake up and they'd be on my face sucking my blood.
Oh. Ouch, I can feel that.
Cheaper than having to buy it.
Yeah, but it's kind of weird sending the makeup department to go to the grocery store to buy all the condoms they have, all the KY and all the Karo syrup because they're using it for bladder effects and things like that. Uh-huh. So you use condoms for that sort of stuff. So they bought out the small town of Morristown, Tennessee. They bought all the condoms in town, all the KY, and you can just imagine this is the buckle of the Bible Belt. The woman's probably going, what are you doing with all this stuff, man?
Wow. Surprised they had it, but hey.
Wow. Now, you developed a whole new following, however, over the past decade, including my wife.
Don't tell Leonard, but my mom thinks you're hot.
That's okay. Okay, I won't.
Just saying.
Because she and my daughter, Jessie... Yeah. Great devotees of Burn Notice, which, of course, is a very well-written, well-cast, well-made show. And gave you a terrific role.
Yeah, Burn Notice was great because I didn't have to star in the damn thing.
Yeah. Well, that's what's great, but you don't have to carry the show, but you get to come in and do your thing.
Yeah, that was the fun part. The star would always give me dirty looks when I would leave before him. But that was my character. I would start early sometimes, and then he would do the middle of the day, and then I'd come in and end the day.
Mm-hmm.
So we had ways to just work it out. But it was a very interesting show because it wasn't a spy show. Well, it wasn't a cop show, a doctor show, or a lawyer show, because I didn't really want to do any three of those types of shows.
Sure.
So it gave you lots of life and death situations, but it was still different.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. You got to be funny, because we know you're funny, but then you also got to see the drama.
Yeah, that was definitely a dramedy. That was more drama than funny, and it got a little more serious as it went.
Yeah.
Very much so. But we got to see your range, which is an amazing thing, especially, like, my mom, like my dad, not very much into the horror stuff.
Well, I just love the fact that some people were like, I didn't realize that old guy was in those weird movies all those years ago. So retroactively, we picked up a few extra Evil Dead fans.
Well, that's good.
But usually Burn Notice and Evil Dead, they don't mix a lot.
No.
Yeah.
Spies and
carnage. It's a whole new audience who knows how badass you are, so that's all right.
Well, you said it, not me.
I wonder, too, when you think back about making your first films, the home movies and all of that, some people say there's no real difference except the machinery of it. You're still doing the same thing, only now you've got more people, definitely more equipment, more technology, but you're still playing make-believe, and you're still trying to tell a good story. What's your view of that?
It is, whether you have 8 crew members or 800, it's still the same. Sam Raimi went on to direct Spider-Man.
Sure.
You know, the first three of the Spider-Mans. And he was shooting some ridiculous sequence. There was a wrestling sequence with 1,200 extras. And he was in the middle of staging something. And he looks over at me. He goes, you know, we're doing the same crap. We just have a lot more money to do it with. And he got right back at it again. You know, so he knew exactly. And if you watch that movie, he's pulled out a lot of old gags that you think are new. Mm-hmm. They're not, because I've seen the Super 8 movies. Yeah. Sam loves it when characters shout out, I can't feel my legs, I can't feel my legs. And it's Spider-Man, that wrestling sequence, the guy's carried out. What is he shouting? I can't feel my legs, I can't feel my legs. Why does he love that? I don't know. But Sam had fun. You could tell he didn't do a traditional superhero thing. He had fun with that character.
Sure he did.
You know?
And so did we. You are, I don't know if you're the very first. I mean, there's always been fans have always existed. Fan magazines go back to the first decade of the 20th century. There were fan magazines by 1914 or 1915. So there've always been fans. And there have been fan letters, fan mail, all of it, fan magazines.
Yeah.
But you were the first contemporary guy I can think of who made a real point and a real effort to interact with your fans and to build a fan base. And you did this before the internet and social media and all that came along. And I want to ask you about that. What inspired that, and how'd you go about it?
Well, these are my clients.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
I mean, they are.
Of course they are.
I mean, these miserable bastards put my kids through college. And I'm really grateful for that.
Uh-huh.
I am. I think it's important to do a little of your own market research when you're out at these things.
Mm-hmm.
What photo are they slapping in front of you?
Right.
You know, what do they watch? What are they disappointed in you about? They'll tell you. It's market research right there. This is how I knew they would not shut up about the Evil Dead movies.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, oh, Sam, yeah, Spider-Man, congratulations with that. When's the next Evil Dead movie? Oh, yeah, Burn Notice. Yeah, number one show on cable. When's the next Evil Dead movie? They didn't care.
Mm-hmm.
So bless them for that. Yeah. And now we're going to milk them for all they're worth.
Sure. I mean, yes, But again, I mean, that sounds so simple and straightforward, but still...
It can be that simple and straightforward.
I know, but it showed an entrepreneurial spirit and a kind of a do-it-yourself, a DIY approach to sustaining and building and sustaining a career, which is pretty smart.
Well, sometimes you got to just tap dance as fast as you can.
Yeah.
You know? There's not a manual for this. That's
no,
the
there
weird
isn't.
Thing.
But you created one. You're as good a role model for how to do this and how to do it well.
You know what I kind of like about conventions now? Yeah. They're kind of getting with the program. Mm-hmm. It used to be guys who did TV shows from 40 years ago.
Right.
And now a lot of these Wizard had a big convention here this weekend, mm-hmm. and they'll bring in people from current movies and current TV shows. Norman Reedus from Walking Dead, when he goes to these things, oh my God, it's a religious experience.
Yeah.
And the guy never takes his sunglasses off. And I think the women go, he's so mysterious. Look at him. Oh, he's so beautiful with his oily hair. Oh my God. And they bring him stuff. He has a shrine of, and there's tears. What the hell is happening? But it's very smart on the convention people. They're
sure
bringing the guy, Norman Reedus, you
well,
know?
The one area or genre or a facet of show business that got this early on was country music. Those are the people that started, I think, fan conventions.
Yeah.
I mean, aside from Comic Cons, which have been around for many, many years, which again honored, you know, the giants of comic books and comic.
We go to Comic Con now. There's not a comic in sight.
No. It's a pop culture con.
It is.
Yeah. Now, what's that like for you going there to San Diego?
San Diego's like the salmon spawning. I got to go back all the time just to see what's going on. It's a very friendly atmosphere. It just shows you, well, 10 years ago, would you see Charlize Theron at Comic-Con?
Yeah.
Not on your life.
Uh-huh.
And now she's like, now it's in their contract. You're going to do this convention, that convention.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now they get it. I think the fans through these things have made their point that you better give us what we want. You better give it to us now. I want my Oompa Loompa now. You know? And so, thankfully, with all these apps and on-demand and VODs, we're getting there.
It's really two-way communication now, which didn't exist, you know, just a generation ago.
Yeah.
We were in the middle of a Twilight stampede at Comic-Con once, and I'm not kidding. It was like animals, and we were holding each other because I was like, if I let go, he's gone.
I had to cross a gauntlet going to see a Star Wars promotion.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
This was a river of humanity that was 50 feet wide, and we're like, we're in a giant van. We couldn't get through. I had to pull a Moses. Parting the Star Wars fans, it's a very dangerous thing to do.
I would say so.
We got through there fast. They're like, what the fuck are you doing? Real quick, just coming through. Emergency, emergency, emergency.
That you made it is astonishing.
Oh, my God. There were some looks of death trying to get through there. They were on a pilgrimage.
Oh, yeah.
Well, yes.
They're very serious people. Well, that was the other thing we walked into once was a slave Leia competition, the costume competition. So we couldn't see them. We're walking forward, and there's all these guys dead-eyed with their phones like this, snapping. And we're going, what the hell is going on? And you get in, there's like 20 slave Leias. Like, oh, this is your dream. Awesome. Great. Let's go the other direction. It's something else. But, and that's the thing, too, is to be able to deal with all of those. Because fans are amazing, but some of them are really scary humans. And
well,
you know,
you get the clamp sometimes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. 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 Oh, yeah.
For those of you at home.
I don't know how I feel about this.
For those of you listening at home.
Now, the worst
Bruce,
one,
Bruce
though.
Bruce is doing a vice-like grip on my
body. Watch this now.
Oh, okay.
You got to get in the nook.
Okay.
Because if you get an overzealous person, they catch you pre-knuckle, there.
Oh, God.
And now they're squeezing for all their life, and you're just hearing snap, crackle, pop the whole time.
Yeah.
So you get some of that. I can see why there's hand sanitizers on all the tables.
Yeah, right? Yes. Do you like my dad didn't protect me for any of what just happened?
Well, you're perfectly safe in my presence.
Oh, all right. We won't talk. The mic hit me in the
but
face.
But I will say this. There's a lot of fans who wait 2 hours, and they get to the table, and they go like this. Hey, how you doing? Oh, there you go. Yeah. Where are you from? Oh, around here. What do you do? Oh, I work. Where do you work? At a place. I asked you where you work! Not a lot of eye contact sometimes.
Yeah.
But they memorize every line of dialogue from your movie, but they can't say one word to you when they get to the table.
Yeah.
That's a waste of your 2 hours, isn't it?
Yeah.
I met Shatner for the first time in the green room. Damn right I'm going to have something to say to him.
You bet.
And it ain't going to be Star Trek. I pulled T.J. Hooker on him.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
But was he responsive to that?
Oh, yeah. Because I told
him. You liked hearing that.
No, I said, Bill, I just got to tell you something. Mr. Shatner.
I was going to say, did you say
I said
Bill?
Mr. Shatner. No. I said Mr. Shatner.
Right.
I said, I just got to tell you, I thought it was really cool in T.J. Hooker. When you'd come into a crime scene, and he'd do this big power slide, camera would keep rolling, he'd get out. You go, damn, that was Shatner who did that. And I go, I can't believe you did that. And his eyes lit up. He goes, the producers didn't want me to do that. They said it was too dangerous. So I work with the stunt people. I can figure this out. You feather the emergency brake so it doesn't stick. They shave it down. The producers don't know that. But I do. It's a 4-part maneuver. Because I'm like, Bill, how do you do it? 4-part. Foot off the gas. Pull the emergency brake, which is feathered. It doesn't stick. You can still steer with the emergency brake. No, it's counterintuitive. You don't think that you could.
Mm-hmm.
So that gets you in position. You only use the real brake to actually stop. So in the pilot of Ash vs. Evil Dead, Ash is supposed to do a power slide up to a cheesy bar.
Mm-hmm.
So I went, got this.
You pull the Shatner.
I got this. And so the stunt guys go, all right, Bruce, they're all Kiwis. You know, it's a full pop maneuver. You know, foot off the gas. You pull the emergency brake, then you can steer. I don't know if you know this. You can steer while you've got the emergency brake on. And you just tip the gas. I go, I got this, pal. I got this. Shatner told me how to do it. So we did it, and in the pilot, I do the slide, camera comes down, and I get out. So I just won a Saturn Award for this show, and I dedicated it to the Shatner power slide.
Oh, they're all right.
So, yeah, so look, if you're going to wait 2 hours to see Lou Ferrigno, come up with something.
Yeah.
Have a plan.
Well, that's me. I've spent my whole life doing that because I've waited at stage doors when I was a kid to meet people. I've done all sorts of things to get to meet some of my heroes, and I've been very lucky getting to interview a lot of people. Tonight's our first opportunity to have a chat.
Exactly.
And I wanted to tell you that earlier this year, I hosted an event at the Redford Theater in Detroit.
Oh, get out of town. That's where we had the premiere for the first Evil Dead.
Yeah, I did. So that's something we now have in common. And we had a great time.
That theater is a great story because they have a volunteer. This is, 1,200 seats, 1,000 seats. I saw Sound of Music there in 70 millimeter.
Mm-hmm.
It was a great revival house.
Restored.
Yeah,
beautiful.
Restored, yeah.
Great, great theater. We did a Disney show there, which went over very well.
It's always, and you've seen a lot of theaters go the other direction.
Yes.
And that's why it's always nice to see a thriving theater that really has a clue and is really doing a good job to... give people what they want.
Absolutely. So, Bruce, you've done so many things. Again, rereading your book, I'm looking at how you had to learn to do a little of everything on those early movies, including and especially the original Evil Dead. You didn't just act. Acting was maybe the least of what you did on that movie. You pulled every crew job and every crew non-existent job there was. Did you find that helpful to you in your professional career that followed?
Yeah, it's important for actors to know that there are other people that do things just as important as your stinking job.
Mm-hmm.
Because your marvelous performance, if you miss your mark and you're out of focus, you can give me that single tear crap all you want. We're not using it. We're not using it. So I usually make a deal with the camera people. I go, I won't get any closer than here,
mm-hmm.
and I won't get any further away from there. In mm-hmm. between, you're on your own. Stick with me.
Yeah.
But you have to acknowledge them. They shot the piano down there. You know, a lot of mm-hmm. really good movies. These are very qualified crew members. And one of the sound guys came up to a very famous actor from The Piano and said, hey, you know, I know you don't like to rehearse. Could you let me know if your speech is going to get really loud or really soft so I can be ready for you? And he goes, just turn the goddamn thing on. And I'm like, that's a really ignorant statement, Mr. Famous Actor, who's well-regarded.
Mm-hmm.
That's a stupid, stupid, selfish thing to say.
Yeah.
And you're a jackass, Mr. Highly-regarded, Mr. Method Bullshit Actor. Because it's a common courtesy, isn't it,
yeah,
to just
sure.
work with these. This is your team. It's Team Ash.
Well, it's,
it takes a village to raise an idiot, you know.
It's not only courtesy. I mean, it's for their own good, too.
Yeah.
It's
if you want
it's your
them
benefit.
To nail it, you've got to help them. You've got to work together. We had a shot in Army of Darkness that was ultimately cut out. I had to hit 14 marks on the floor without, of course, looking at any one of them.
Oh.
And then the camera ended in an extreme close-up of my ear.
Mm-hmm.
And
as it would.
It was actually an amazing shot. And mm-hmm. as it got near the end, out of the corner of my eye, I could see the camera guy just trembling. And he was just, buckets of sweat were coming down. It's like, yeah, I got to do my thing, but so does he.
Yeah.
He's ending on the close-up of an ear after hitting 12 different focus marks. You know,
mm-hmm.
I mean, that's what you have to acknowledge. It's important that you work together. And nobody's job is any more important. Let them do their job.
Yeah.
And help them do their job.
Help them, because helping them helps you.
Absolutely.
Makes you look good.
Every actress of the golden age always talks to the person who does the lights, because they want you to like them, because they want to look pretty. And they always say, why would you be mean to someone who's just here to make you look good?
I know an actor who's been known to be a jerk.
Only one?
I know a lot of actors who are known to be jerks. But one particular actor has a lump on his forehead from mm-hmm. his early days as a bouncer.
Mm-hmm.
And if you light it from the front, you can't see it.
Mm-hmm.
And a friend of mine who directed the movie that this actor was in goes, every time you see the bump on the actor's forehead, it's because the actor had pissed the crew off, and the lighting guy goes, just a minute, I'm not ready. And he would take a light, and he'd move it from the front, and he would light it from the side, so you'd get a beautiful shot of that bump on his forehead. Never piss off a cameraman. Ever.
Yep.
No.
I interviewed a very interesting two women at the TCM Classic Film Festival who were continuity people. They used to call them script girls in the old days, in the old sexist days. Now they're called continuity people. And they're in charge of, like, if there's an eating scene, these are always tough to do. You're doing a dinner table scene. Well, at a dinner table scene, if you are slurping your soup and you're at the head of the table, like you're the dad, and you're the daughter right next to him, and you have a fork and some chicken and all that, well, they have to keep track of all that. And there's going to be possibly a master shot and then close-ups. And she was saying that some of the younger actors, again, don't have the patience to learn this technique. About matching, exactly.
You eat on this line.
Right.
You sip on that line.
Exactly.
You put your fork down on that line.
Said the professional actor.
Yeah.
Right. So I said, how do you deal with that? She said, oh, it's real simple. You tell them that if you don't learn to do it, you won't get any close-ups in the scene. and then suddenly they start. It starts to dawn on them that maybe they should pay more attention.
Having said that, watch Goodfellas.
Mm-hmm.
It's either Goodfellas or Raging Bull. I think it's Raging Bull. It's Joe Pesci in a restaurant with a cigarette.
Mm-hmm.
This is a Martin Scorsese movie.
Yeah,
he's a very highly regarded filmmaker. That cigarette is a different length in every shot of the scene. It's up, it's down, it's in the ashtray, it's here, and it's in his mouth, it's here. Uh-huh. Because I think Scorsese went, okay, but I'm using the best of Joe.
Right.
Yeah.
Joe Pesci's giving me the best crap when his cigarette is here, and when his cigarette is here, I'm not going to bother Joe with that.
Right.
Yeah.
And that was probably a good call.
Yeah. And I think his answer, I wouldn't presume to speak for him, but I think I've heard others say, if you're really paying attention to the cigarette,
you're
the scene's no good.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're going to be focusing on the actor and a great performance.
Sam Raimi would drive our continuity people completely out of their tree. He'd set up a shot and go, bring that table over. And the script supervisor, that's 20 feet away. It looks closer through the lens. He was based everything on the lens.
Mm-hmm.
And this poor woman was pulling her hair out. And Sam's like, no. Army of Darkness, he would ask the art department, how many pikes do we have with the flags? We have 20. Bring all 20. And he'd shove them into the shot, however he could figure out how to do that. He didn't care how many pikes were in the previous shot. This shot needs all the pikes. Bring them in. He was very fluid in that respect. Because you can get... you can get way too caught up in that. I did a movie, Congo, and I did my first scene. This was adapted by John Patrick Shanley, okay? He's a big playwright. Good for him. And he probably has earned the Paddy Chayefsky clause, which is actors don't change my dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
I'm too precious. Yeah, if you're Paddy Chayefsky, if you're adapting a monkey movie... I mean, come on, folks. What are we talking about here? So I do my first take. I'm doing a broadcast to Laura Linney. She plays my girlfriend. I'm dead before the credits are over in Congo.
Mm-hmm.
And the script's continuity.
Sometimes you just get lucky.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, believe me. That was a good movie to die in. Yeah, I died before the movie. Yeah. That's fine. But the script supervisor came over and went, Bruce, in that take, you added a and a well and a huh. I was like, you're pulling my leg, right? I didn't even know that I added them. And she goes, oh, we really need to stick to the script. So here's what that did. Take two. Was it any good? No. Because my eyes are now a deer in the headlights. Oh, God, I got to say these exact words. So the performance is in the toilet.
Mm-hmm.
Does anybody care about that? No. Mm-hmm. That's bullshit, Mr. High Budget Movie. A scene needs to work. It just needs to work.
Sure,
you need
to
find... every scene has a moment.
Mm-hmm.
And you need to find what the moment is, and that's got to play, regardless.
Yeah.
You know, you can't direct from Video Village. I don't like Video Village directors.
Yeah.
It's so easy. They got the 18 monitors. I'm like, will you put that shit down and like sit right there?
And some
so that you can talk to me while we're going here. Like
some directors do, and I know some actors say the exact same thing, that they want feedback. What do you want from a director? You want to have the feedback. You want your coach on the football team to say to you, good play, nice going. And they can't say that when they're around the corner behind a whole bunch of
monitors. Start playing the telephone game. You hear from around the corner, then the assistant director goes, and by the time you finally hear it, it's gibberish. You don't even know what it is. So you can get a little over technical with all this crap.
Yeah.
I'm like, grab an Apple box and sit down and pay attention.
Right. What do you want from a director?
A plan. I want a plan.
Uh huh.
Yeah. A plan.
Mm-hmm.
Sam Raimi, you know, he goes to direct Quick and the Dead.
Mm-hmm.
His first day shooting is Gene Hackman. He goes, okay, Gene, you come out of this door, you signal to the guy across the street, then you come on over here and sit in the chair, and there's a line that's not in the script, but you whisper, what are the odds on the kid? And Gene goes, I'm not doing any of that. What do? You better have a reason why you had him do all that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So he was testing Sam. First day of shooting, are you full of shit, yes or no?
Yeah.
So Sam goes, okay, well, you come out of this door, you see Pat Hengel across the street, you got to start the gunfight. You're the boss of the town. So you don't have to wink or nod, but I need a signal. Because Pat Hengel goes, right, and we start the gunfight. So Gene goes, okay, I'll nod to the guy, but I'm not going to sit in that chair. Sam goes, you don't have to. You're the king of the town. The king sits. Look at all the extras. They're the peasants. They stand. They're all standing. You're the only one sitting, but you don't have to sit. You can be like all the other people if you want. He goes, okay, I'll sit in the chair. But I'm not going to whisper, what are the odds on the kid? Sam goes, you don't have to. But later in the movie, they're going to realize that that was your son, Leonardo DiCaprio, and that you might have a shred of humanity going, what are the odds on my son?
Mm-hmm.
So I went to visit Sam, and he popped the dailies in. Gene Hackman nods to him, sits in the chair, and whispers, you know, what are the odds on the kid? Sam's like, yeah, you son of a bitch. Because
he passed the test.
Yeah. He passed the test, and he had a legitimate, not a made-up answer.
Right. Yeah.
But they did have to hide all the storyboards when Gene came on the set.
Well, he's a tough cookie.
He'd go, what are these little pictures? What are these little drawings? What is this? What is this? This isn't a story. This is a comic book. What is this? They go, Gene's coming. I got the storyboards.
Gene, I just came up with this idea for a shot. You know, Sam is a major storyboarder.
Uh-huh.
Everything is scripted. And when I watched him, he had a great reverse psychology, but I saw him way near the end of the shoot.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd already heard how he got dealt with the first day. This is near the end. They do a take where Gene is reacting to the town blowing up. I just had one day to visit Sam on the set, mm-hmm. so I got to watch this. It's blowing up, and he's supposed to drop to his knees and then do this and do that. And so they shoot it, and Sam comes over to the monitor, and he goes like this. They're watching the playback. And Sam goes, well, that'll work, I guess. And Gene goes, well, we can go again if you want. Sam goes, okay, great, change the cameras, put this thing over there, put way more dust, put more dirt in his face, we got to throw some other shit in here, dig up the dirt, Gene, I need you to hit it a little harder. Okay, boom, he changed everything of the shot. And Gene was like, what's going on? Action, boom, boom, more crap was thrown, the cameras are shaking. I'm like, you clever son of a bitch. So he found a way to make it Gene's idea to do another take. Mm-hmm. Oh, okay, Gene, yeah, we'll do it for you.
Well, see, I mean,
I thought that was awesome.
I know. Well, they say
he's tricking Gene Hackman, an Academy Award winner.
A really
How do
good
you direct
director.
Him? Trick him.
A really good director has to be something of a psychologist, I guess. Yeah.
It's a little bit of everything.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Sam to me is just a bully. I mean, I work one day on the Oz, the Great and Powerful set. I play mm-hmm. a winky guard in it. Mm-hmm. Sam starts trash talking me. I start trash-talking him back. The whole crew falls dead silent. Who's this guy trash-talking? Sam Raimi. I'm like, shut up. You don't know this guy.
And you were even in your home turf. You were in Michigan.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's where the abuse gets even worse, you know.
Oh,
I'm
well.
Like, Sam, are you going to hit Gene Hackman with a 2x4 like you did to me on Army of Darkness? We're ready to shoot a shot. I'm strapped in to do some stupid effects thing. We can't find Sam anywhere. From behind me, I feel a 2x4 smacking me in the ankles. And I hear Sam, it goes like this. You ready, mister? You ready for the scene, buddy? And this is a hit every time he's in between that. I'm like, oh my God, I can't defend myself. He goes, you get ready? Are you ready? I don't think you're ready for the scene yet. Oh my God, he's breaking my ankle. And we haven't even shot anything.
Oh gosh.
That's how he motivates me. So when he did Quick and the Dead, I'm like, you're going to poke Sharon Stone with a pencil in the back of her neck to get her to act? What are you going to do?
Did he?
No, he was very diplomatic.
Wow.
The assistant directors had problems with her because she would talk on her cell phone and... they had to work out when they were going to call roll sound, like when she was ready to do the shot.
Mm-hmm.
She goes, I'll be ready when I'm on my mark. So the assistant director would watch her, and anytime she got within like 5 feet of her mark, he'd go, roll sound, roll sound. He'd try and trap her into it.
Good grief.
But, you know.
I must say, listening to all these stories of you and Sam, that there seems to be an element of masochism involved on your part, Bruce.
Sam saw something early on. I did a bar mitzvah with him in high school.
What do you mean you did a bar mitzvah
with
him?
We entertained at a bar mitzvah.
Are you a rabbi?
No. Sam is a nice Jewish boy, and he played a magician. He was a magician.
Oh, okay.
And I was his assistant, Hung Lo. And we would do magic tricks, and then he would hit me with a stick every time either I screwed up or whatever, and he noticed that people laughed whenever he did that.
Uh-huh.
And so he made an association with pain.
And he's never stopped.
Pain is funny.
Okay.
Yeah.
Man.
Whatever. I'm glad he's comfortable. Well, finally, I worked on the Spider-Man movies, and on the second Spider-Man movie, Sam started to insult Tobey Maguire just a little bit. I said to Toby, he likes you. Oh. It's good news. Good news. Because he's going to start tormenting.
Have you ever hit him back?
We got in one fight and I won. We got in one fight in high school. I would not let him win, that little son of a bitch. He's a year younger than me. I had to school him once, and I think he remembered that. So he deep down fears that if I snapped, I could kill him.
Yeah.
So he does know that.
I think if you just
every time he hits me, he's like, "Are you going to kill me next? Are you going to kill me next?" He knows that I could.
Yeah,
smart.
I got you.
The nice thing is he's getting older, just like me, so he can't do it as bad anymore.
I don't know.
Another thing that we talked about, you embracing your fans and listening to your fans, and making good use of the feedback that you get. But the other thing you embraced was your role. Now, some people, you know, flee from their parts. You do hear about actors who, even during the first season of a TV series, can't wait to get out of it. They can't wait. They want to make movies now. They don't want to do that. 13 episodes. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
And you're laughing in recognition,
yeah,
right, at what I'm saying.
There's a lot of actors who are jackasses out there. Be careful what you wish for.
Yeah.
Oh, boy, if I was only on a TV show, I'd really show them. Then they get on it, they go, oh, if I could only get off this TV show, I'd really show them. It's like, shut up and do the work.
Is that you consider yourself a working actor?
That's
your attitude?
That's pretty much
your approach?
Yeah, mm-hmm. And I'm employable because I will show up.
Mm-hmm. Well,
no, that's a lot of it.
It's often been said that.
It actually matters. And, you know, no matter what the material is, you try and get the best out of it.
Sure.
That you can. And, you know, in retrospect, there's a lot of movies, would I do now that I did then? Mm-hmm. No, but that was me then.
Yeah.
Maniac Cop sounded like a perfect idea, you know, back then.
Well, if you want to work, you want to work. That's
you
the
work,
thing.
Work. Work begets work.
Yeah.
Have you ever been on the set? I mean, we hear this expression, and sometimes it's literal, and sometimes it's figurative, of the actor who won't come out of the trailer.
Yeah, my theory is you can't get off the set until you get on it.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody who wants to get off the set, start by getting on it.
Yeah.
And then you'll go home.
Mm-hmm.
The smartest guy who deals with that is like Clint Eastwood. If actors don't come out, he's going to get a double, and he's going to shoot the scene without you, and they're going to just move right along.
Yeah. Mm.
That's the best way to do it.
That's smart.
Nothing can stop me.
That's smart, yes.
So you stay right in that trailer.
Yeah.
I mean, that's sometimes it's the only way to do that until an actor realizes their place in the whole universe.
In the scheme of it, yes. Mm-hmm.
Do you know Bob Forster?
Yeah. Oh, he's a great... Bob's been around forever.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know, Robert Forster, yeah.
We just talked to him recently, and he too has that kind of global view that you do.
Yeah. He's a dear friend of ours, and I'm lucky I've known him most of my life.
Yeah.
And I told all of my actor friends, he came onto the podcast, and he gave a short speech about all the reasons why you need to not be an ass. As an actor, you need to show up, you need to, and he just went through this whole thing.
Many of the points you've touched on tonight.
A lot of what you've said, and that's the thing.
Well, you know what, they're spending probably on any given day several $100,000 to shoot a show. And if you are unprepared and wasting people's time, they've been known to dock you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you waste a day, Some actors have been incapable of working because they were hungover or whatever, and would write the producer a check to cover the day's shooting. Wow. And they'll take it.
Yeah.
Because they got to eat it.
Yeah.
So you can't, my feeling is you cannot waste 1 minute of their time. I complain a lot and I'm in people's faces, but it's not about the size of the trailer. It's about the scene or how we're going to do it or how we're going to shoot it.
Right.
All the other arguments are kind of worthless. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, caring is not the same thing as being obnoxious or a pain in someone's ass. That's
or
the,
being alert or aware of something.
If you just want something to be the best it can be, then that bully for you.
The nice thing is we work on a show like this, we have the ability to change a scene in the middle of the scene.
Mm-hmm.
What are you laughing at over there, Dana? Dana DiLorenzo. Oh, changer of lines. There's some atmospheres, honestly, that are welcoming to that, and some that are not. Mm-hmm. There are some showrunners who would never put me on their show because they want every word spoken like Congo, like the wordsmith from Congo. And there are other situations where we feel like we're part of the process.
Yeah.
So include us.
Yeah. Now, is there? This is not your first experience in New Zealand because, of course, you worked on Hercules and Xena Warrior Princess, which were both shot down there.
And Jack of All Trades, so this is my fourth show down there. Yeah.
And is movie making the same or television production the same anywhere you go?
No, it's different everywhere. And the Kiwis have a great, great method. They like to go home after a good, hard day of work. And if you ask for overtime, the department heads get together and they come back and go, oh, no, we're good. And you have to stop filming and go home. In America, they go, we're shooting for 4 hours of overtime. Suck on that. And there's nothing you can do.
Yeah.
There's nothing you can do. Mm-hmm. It's much different. They want to go home and scrape the barnacles off their sailboats. They want to just have a life. It's a very high quality of life there. And we can make dinner plans for 7:30 every night.
Wow.
We work from 7 to 7.
What a civilized approach.
Well, but here, as a result, every crew member knows they're going to get out of there.
Yeah.
So during the day, they're working it. Yeah. We're laying that track there. We're slicing heads off. We're mopping up the blood because it's 7. We're done. If you know you're never going to get out of there and work an 18-hour day, it's like communism.
Yeah.
Slow down, brother. We're never going to get out of here.
Yeah.
What's your hurry, young one? Relax. We'll get to it when we get to it. It's kind of like that.
Yeah.
And it's self-defeating. So, you know, when you hear filmmakers brag about their 18-hour shooting days, my response now is, you don't know what you're doing.
Exactly. Yeah.
12 hours is plenty. Good God, it's 4 hours longer than any other schmo has to work.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You know, get it done. Get out of there. And the Kiwis are very meticulous. A lot of them, very English background. They're very proper, like the camera department. They're very sort of David Lean-ish and don't cross in front of the lens. And then the art department, they're all like pirates. It's a really interesting crew there. But thankfully now, because of the Kiwis and the quality of the production, nobody can make fun of our cheesy special effects anymore.
No.
Which is very nice, I got to tell you. Because that was the thing. People loved to say, ah, the crappy special effects, they're so cute. It's like, why don't you shut up? We did the best we could. So now it's nice to be able to just have... It's not part of the show anymore. You just now the horror can be a little more real.
Yeah.
Well, you're making it work.
We end the show the same way each week. Okay. We like to ask if there are any hidden gems, movies that you love that you don't think people have seen, or even if it's a TV series that you love, something that
underappreciated.
T.J. Hooker.
Well,
because it's the hair show. Adrian Zemed's hairline comes down to here. James Darren used to have hair like on Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea. Now he's kind of working it. He's hanging in there. He's working it. And Shatner just, get the raccoon out and put it on the head. We're just going to not mess with that. And it's just like Starsky and Hutch. You can tell which take they used based on how many previous skid marks you saw coming around the corner. So
that's great to look for.
It is, especially now that it's in HD on the Universal Channel. Now you see all the horrible detail that you never saw before.
Good tip. Thank you, Bruce.
Yeah, it's fun. Wow. Take three. Boom. Nailed it.
All right.
Shatner power slide.
Shatner power slide.
Well, You nailed this conversation in one take. Thank you, Bruce Campbell, for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much.
Pleasure to be with you.
Thank you.
Thanks to everybody here at Fantastic Fest and at the Highball. You guys are just great. The audience is wonderful. The people who run this festival are great. We hope to be back next year. And until then, we hope that you'll tune in again, hear us. And you can find me at Leonard Maltin on Twitter and online at www.leonardmaltin. I'm not supposed to say www anymore.
You can say it however you want.
LeonardMaltin.com, God darn it. Anyway,
and what about you,
good night,
Bruce?
Everybody.
Where do they find you, Bruce?
Thank you. They'll find me in New Zealand 5 months out of the year.
Right.
Thank you very much.
You're at Groovy Bruce.
I know. It's Bruce hyphen Campbell. If you don't put the hyphen, you get a Dodge dealership in Michigan. Bruce Campbell Dodge. So, yeah.
Go. Accept no substitutes. There's only one Bruce Campbell.
The people's right. candidate. Good
Thank
night.
You very much.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.